Ladies and gentlemen, it's your friend Mike Brady from Oceanliner Designs. I thought today we'd have a little bit of fun. See, in the past, we've talked a little bit about the way Titanic was built. We've looked at some of the only footage, actual film, moving picture taken of Titanic's construction. But I thought today we might do something similar, a little bit different. Turns out there are some pretty spectacular photographs taken of Titanic while she was being built. And the story of how these photographs were taken is well worth telling. So if you look at these pictures, a lot of them will seem familiar. You would have seen them in books and documentaries throughout the years. Today we're going to pick them apart and look at some interesting little details that are hidden in there and what they can tell us about the way Titanic was built and other ships like her. But to begin with, we have to learn where these pictures came from, because that in and of itself is a very, very interesting story. And if you look down the corner in a lot of these pictures, when you see them blown up on walls at museums and things like that, you'll see a single word. Welch. It's a name. It's the name of a very interesting guy. His name was Robert Welch. Welch was born in the late 1850s, and he lived all the way through to the 1930s. And he was a very scientific guy. He was a man of many different interests, but one of his early passions, one of his early deep interests, was photography. And this is an era where photography is still a science. There are hobby photographers, sure, and there are people with box brownie cameras, but to actually take really high quality pictures and get these developed, do them the developing yourself, work with this very complicated process, is not an easy task. And Welch takes to photography in this boom of this brand new technology, and clearly really enjoys it. From the 1870s, he's in Belfast, at which time he's given a really interesting job. Welch is made the official yard photographer for the shipyard Harland and Wolff in Belfast. Now, this has huge implications for history because Welch was a man of exacting standards and he used very large glass plate negatives when he was taking his photographs. These are not like your box brownie pocket cameras. These are big cameras on tripods that shoot onto these massive plate negatives. It's very complicated. It's very expensive. So why was Welch doing this? It wasn't just for fun. Like I said, at the time, photography was expensive. It's this new and exciting technology, and Welch is shooting these photos to a very, very high degree of detail. You can zoom right on in and see a lot of things that are going on. For Harland and Wolff, the shipbuilders, one of the premier shipbuilders in the world, this is huge news, because before then, they would have had to have got artists in to sketch what their ships might look like. There's a constant battle being fought by different shipyards to try and stay relevant, to try and get their name and their brand out as much as possible. So what could be better than to have a photographer come in and shoot pictures of your ships being built and being launched? So of course, when it was Titanic's turn in 1912, Welch was still the yard photographer, and he did the thing he'd been doing for many years at that point. He came around and he shot a lot of pictures of Titanic. Maybe a lot isn't the right term. He shot some pictures of Titanic. There's really not that many. By the time Titanic came around, Olympic had already been built and launched, and Welch photographed that ship in excruciating detail. There are dozens and dozens of Welch photos of Olympic. There's only a handful of Titanic, because the press did the same thing. Titanic and Olympic were almost impossible to tell apart in the early stages of their construction. So if Olympic's already been built, then Welch didn't feel the need to take a lot of pictures of Titanic for the very same reason the press didn't, because they already had pictures of Olympic that they could basically pass off as Titanic. And this is an issue that has dogged historians now for decades, where photographs of Olympic are always, always misquoted or misrepresented as being of Titanic. It's just not the case. It's very, very few photographs of Titanic that exist that were taken by Welch. So with that preamble out of the way, why don't we start having a little look through and see what goodies we can pull out of these pictures. This is the earliest picture that Welch took of Titanic's construction. Not counting ones where he was actually photographing Olympic with Titanic kind of in the background. This is him standing in Titanic's hull, taking a picture down the length of the ship. It's very interesting because it shows us how the interior structure of Titanic was built before they put the decks on. This is kind of like a cross-section view, like an x-ray vision of Titanic's structure. You can see that he's standing in front of one of the big boiler uptake casings. And these were the shafts that ran deep down into the bottom of the ship to allow the smoke and the gases to come up through the ship. The uptakes would be installed in here, and they would then lead to the funnels and get those gases and smoke out of the ship. There was also like air trunking, so vents to bring air down into the boilers, the stoke holds at either end. And then these would have been lined with very thick bulkheads and insulation to prevent the heat, which could run up to like 300 degrees Celsius, from permeating out into the ship. What's really interesting here, though, is that while they've got all this like really high-tech stuff going on, riveting, all that kind of thing, they're shoring up the decks with very roughly cut wooden poles, wooden posts that look like essentially just tree trunks that had been felled. In theory, a little further into Titanic's construction, they wouldn't have to worry about this because there would be a bulkhead here that would support the deck above, but they haven't put the bulkhead in yet, and so they have to shore it up with wooden posts, and then eventually they'd take those out. You can see what's supporting the decks are these beams. These are called deck beams, and because this is in the upper part of the hull, this is all passenger space, so you would expect the next big step, once all these men are finished working, these iron workers and steel workers, all of this would be covered in wooden paneling and disguised, of course. So passengers in first and second class wouldn't really see a lot of that like exposed metal work. In third class, it was a different story. What's amazing is these guys just dangling over the edges. Operational health and safety back then really didn't exist as it does today, and people were often in serious risk of getting hurt. And they did, and a good handful of men died building Titanic. But the other flip side of that coin is that a lot of the men tasked with managing the shipyard that built Titanic, like Thomas Andrews, were actually quite concerned with the safety of their workers, and so the standards of safety at Harland & Wolff were probably better than any other shipyard of the era. Thomas Andrews was very, very involved in the safety of his men and cared a lot for them, very famously. But it was just a different era, and so you didn't have a lot of scaffolding. You didn't have a lot of protective gear to help you if you fell. So you see crazy things, like guys just like dangling over what is fundamentally a very deep drop into a metal chasm, a metal abyss. It's pretty gnarly. Towering even way over the ship, you can see the top of the Aral gantry. So we're going to get a better view of this in a minute, but you can kind of get a sense of what this structure is. This is a very specialist piece of equipment in itself, in and of itself, because Harland & Wolff couldn't just start building Titanic and Olympic. They had a kind of antiquated yard that was used to building ships of about 400, 500, 600 feet in length as an upper band. Titanic and Olympic are 880 feet, so they had to expand these slipways. And so they rolled a whole bunch of slipways into one or two, and then the two main slipways became slip number one and two. That is where Olympic and Titanic would be built side by side. And then to support the construction of these ships, they had to build an entire gantry system that could support cranes and scaffolding for lowering pieces of machinery and plates and things down onto the bed of the dock where they were, or the slipway where they were building the ship. And then hydraulic riveting machines, which was, again, cutting edge technology where they should make an appearance later on, but they have a riveting head that can hang down, and they would be able to put that riveting head over a piece of steel and then put a rivet, drive a rivet home using that instead of hammering it in by hand. That would be supported by the gantry overhead. It also gives them an opportunity to rig scaffolding to the gantry where they can actually plate the hull of the ship. So it's pretty telling that Welsh has started photographing Titanic at this state of the construction. He had already photographed Olympic's keel being laid, the very early stages of Olympic's construction. So why photograph Titanic when they could just reuse the pictures? There are very big gaps in Titanic's construction that Welsh just didn't photograph at all. It was expensive, kind of unnecessary, because truth be told, the pictures of Olympic do just as good a job of conveying the process, the scale, and all those kinds of things. These photos are very, very useful for trade journals, for journals about engineering, like the shipbuilder or the engineer. That's where these pictures are really destined to go. These are a little bit for Harland & Wolff's records, but mainly these are designed to show, hey, this is why we're the world's best shipbuilder. Look at the scale. Look at what we're building here. That's why they invest all this money into this technology, this photography. And everything is designed to look as good as possible for these photographs, because they serve as an advertisement, as an advertising piece for the company, for the builders, and for the White Star Line as well. So it's all part of the package. They also photographed the builder's models. So the shipyards would build a model of the ship they were building to show to booking agents and the public what the ship would be expected to look like when it's finished, to the company so they can get a sense, and the builders' models become a real source of pride for the shipbuilders as well. So they are photographed in turn, and those photographs are distributed as postcards and things like that. Photography is also so important to Harland and Wolff that they actually change the way they make their builders' models a little bit. Instead of painting the underside of the ship a more realistic, brighter red tone, which we understand that ships are painted with quite a bright red anti-foul, they painted their hulls in this kind of very light pink colour. The reason being, it shows up much better in photographs. It's also the reason why Olympic was painted white or a very, very light grey when she was launched. It shows up against the drab grey of the background. It looks just bigger and more impressive. So everything is geared towards this kind of propaganda-like approach to documenting the way these ships are built. This is possibly one of the most famous photographs taken of Titanic. You've seen it in dozens of books and videos and documentaries and all kinds of things. But it's little known that Welsh actually had three shots at taking it. So he took this one, he took this one, and he took this one. So we'll look at the first one because it's from a slightly different angle. It's a little bit sharper of an angle. And it's just really interesting because it gives you a view of the Aral gantry. So you can actually see how this thing was built a little bit. You can see some of the structure above where the cranes are slung. They've actually got lines and things rigged. This photograph is obviously really important for Harland and Wolff because it's the first view that people have of Titanic. It's one of the first main views that they've released to the public of the ship in construction. And it's basically ready for launch. So this is sometime around about May 1911. Because the ship's waterline and the painting has been completed, ready for launch. What probably hasn't been completed is the ship's nameplate, or if it has been completed, it's not big enough or legible enough in the photographs. And so what Welsh has done is he's actually gone in and hand-painted the name, actually etched it into the photograph to make it clearer for trade journals and magazines and the press, and even postcards when they actually begin to circulate this. We can see that Titanic is approaching a really good state of completion, ready for launch. What is missing is the entire front of the bridge. So if you actually look over here, you can see that B deck and A deck, the forward ends are just not even, they haven't even started those yet. So the bridge is missing, the forward end of that deck is missing. The ship is really an empty hulk at this point, and that's for good reason, because you cannot launch a ship when it's complete. As the Italian shipbuilders accidentally noticed and learnt when they built the Principessa Yolanda in 1907, totally complete with furniture and everything inside, without ballast or weight for balance, the ship immediately rolled over and sank when it was launched. So you can't be doing that. We do get a very interesting view of the launching cradle. So this is the part of the ship where the hull is physically riveted to a cradle that itself is held in place with a trigger, a mechanism that can only be triggered with these very large hydraulic rams, which we do get a photograph of shortly. So this is big, big pieces of technology. This is what's holding Titanic in place onto the launching slipway, onto the ramp, that once the resistance is let go, the ship and this whole bit of launching cradle here will roll down the slipway. Unless those hydraulic pumps aren't triggered, the trigger isn't released, the ship will stay in place. Hopefully. Another nice little detail here is you can see people often ask, like, what is this hole at the front of the Titanic? It looks like an eye or something. You can see there's a cable coming out of it, quite a thick cable. So this is often called a fairlead or a hawse hole, and it's essentially an outlet for a large line to secure to an anchor. So in this case, this line that you see here was kept on a big reel in a special room compartment here down on C deck on Titanic, and the reel sat at the very front of the ship, and it could be connected to the central anchor, or possibly more importantly, it could be let out and connected to a tug or another ship for towing in case Titanic was disabled. When that wasn't in use, a plug could be inserted so that there would be no like ingress of water or anything like that in a storm. And indeed, when Titanic was launched, the plug was in, as you'll see in a minute. But as you can see, Titanic's hull is essentially complete, but it's empty. There's nothing inside, they haven't fitted the anchors, nothing heavy has been put inside Titanic yet, except for a couple of pieces of steam machinery that will be needed when the ship is launched. This view is obviously so impressive to Welsh, he captures it three times, and it's definitely one of the most famous photographs of Titanic. We've all seen it. Moving on. By the time he takes the final version of the photograph, a few things have changed since the last time he took it, possibly maybe a few weeks beforehand. They have fitted anchors now to Titanic's hull. They've also plugged the hawse hole we were mentioning. So they've put that plug in. Titanic is essentially now ready for launch. So we're going to see Titanic be launched very, very shortly after this photograph has been taken, just weeks after the previous version. Maybe he wasn't happy with it. Maybe he didn't think it showed enough detail. Titanic's just about ready for launch. He also photographs the stern, so the very back of the ship, in place before launch. So this is a great photograph because it shows a lot of the structure built around the ship to actually build it. But we actually start to see that they have got the rudder in place, but not the ship's propellers. And there's very good reason for this. I'll talk about that in a minute. We can also see they've actually put some kind of big rod on the rudder, some kind of stiffening bands to hold the rudder to the stern of the ship. So we'll flick on over to the next picture, which shows a little bit of action around the rudder and the stern before the launch. This is again a very famous photograph of Titanic. We now get a clearer view of the stiffening bands they've put on the rudder connecting it to the hull. The reason for this is because Titanic's going to be sliding down the slipway at her launch at quite a good bit of speed, at a rate of, you know, 10, 12, 13 knots. And so she's got to be moving fairly quickly. At this stage, the hull probably weighs about 20 something thousand tons. So there's a lot of weight. There's a lot of momentum there. So it could be that that rudder, which itself weighs about 100 tons, is about 6 or 7 stories tall. Without that support, could jam hard over to the left. It could then put the ship off its course. It could swing the ship around. It could break the rudder's pintles off. It's just bad news. So the best thing to do in that scenario is to obviously clamp it tight against the center line of the ship so it's dead straight, so it's not going to wobble in any direction and cause the ship to veer off into disaster. But they've also not put the propellers on. So in this picture, you can see they're actually beginning to install the starboard propeller shaft here, which is this big, long, silvery shaft sticking out of the fairing for the propellers. So the propellers aren't attached at this point. In the past, ships were launched with their propellers on, but as they entered the water, there's this great bit of footage of Oceanics launching from maybe about 12, 13 years before Titanic. And as they enter the water, they're not geared to the engines or anything, and you can actually start to see them churning because just purely by them being forced over the water. You know, it's not good. It's not good practice. It looks kind of cool, but it's a little dangerous. You've got these big spinning blades, and it could damage the shaft. It could damage the blades. So they essentially figured, no, it's better to launch our ships without propellers. And indeed, it is standard practice to launch ships without these kind of fixtures because it's pretty easy to put propellers on a ship once they're in the dry dock. After the launch, it's no big deal. So a weird thing about this is we start to see Welsh doing a bit of doctoring, for want of a better term. A little bit of Photoshop, a little bit of early 1900s Photoshop. We already saw him writing the name of Titanic previously on that other picture. Here, he's deleted a guy. There's this kind of ghostly image where we can see someone leaning on the propeller shaft. He's been deleted. And the reason for this, I think, is because it looks to me like the guy moved when Welsh didn't want him to. He would basically tell everybody to stay still as they could, which most of them did, including this poor kid who's sort of draped over the end of one of the shafts. It looks to me like this guy here moved quite a lot because you'd actually see his hand has brushed and there's like this streak where his hand would have moved. And I don't think Welsh liked that. And so he just deleted him, scratched him out, and then painted over where he would have been by hand. So a little bit of early Photoshop there because it wasn't quite what he was after. These are the hydraulic rams I was telling you about a little earlier. So these are what are going to essentially, at the signal, release the trigger, which will allow the launch cradle to be let go, and Titanic will thunder down the slipway. So this is a big part of the actual launching process, and you can see those there. They are very big, very kind of like comical looking because they're full of massive bolts and very impressive engineering. And the day of the launch is not too far away. But while Titanic is being built, the engineering works at Harland & Wolff are also doing their thing. So the ship's hull is only one part of the construction. The launch is all big and exciting, but once the ship is launched, the ship needs to be finished. And a big part of that will be installing the machinery. And so these are Titanic's engines. The reason we know these are Titanic's engines is because we keep seeing the number 401. Harland and Wolff early on would assign numbers to their ship's hulls in order, in ascending order, to essentially identify what ship is what, aside from the ship's name. Names change, but a hull number doesn't. Titanic was number 401, Olympic was number 400. This is in the engine workshop at Harland and Wolff. You can see it is a massive, massive warehouse, some stories tall, and they've erected Titanic's engines here. Themselves are about 2-3 stories tall. These are big machines. This is only for test fitting. All of these things, all of these big pieces of steel have been cast, they've been machined, they've been laid, they've been worked on. They are huge. To give you some sense of scale, we can actually see the ghostly outline of a guy here who's just moved. But more impressively, or more interestingly, we can see some men's jackets. So they're hard at work. They don't want to get their jackets all messed up, so they've just hung them on clotheslines there. So nails, by the looks of it. That gives you a scale of how big these things are. They're just test fitting them to make sure that everything works before they have to take it apart again and then take these things out on big carriages out to Titanic so they can then be loaded in after the ship's been launched. But you have to make sure everything fits before it goes out. So the crew, the work staff, had to do this huge job of assembling all these engines. You can see here's one engine and there's another one straight behind it. They've assembled them back to back and they would test fit them, take them apart, install them in Titanic. Interestingly, down here, we can actually see there's a few bits from Titanic that haven't been installed yet. So there's a lot of things marked 401. It looks like there are casings for the eccentrics. There's also a medium pressure cylinder head that's sitting there, a low pressure cylinder head. And then behind that, we've actually got a much smaller engine. So you can actually see the support legs, support columns for an engine marked 415. So that would be the Harland & Wolff built ship Arlanza, which was hull number 415. It was actually being built alongside Titanic at this stage because Olympic had been launched, and in her place, they built the Arlanza. And Arlanza's going to make a cameo very shortly. This is another really famous picture. So this is Titanic's port engine, and we can tell because of the way that the steam line here is. You can see there's like a big pipe there, a big cylindrical pipe. That's for the main steam line that would service the ship's engines. That line would then lead out to the condensers. We've done a whole video on how these engines worked, but what's interesting is this whole structure was actually torn from the ship when it broke in half, even though it's like very heavily reinforced. You can see how thick these bed plates are, which the engine's actually sitting on. It was just ripped apart when the ship broke up, and they were deposited in the debris field when Titanic broke apart. Again, very impressive stuff. This has been recirculated a lot because it really gives a sense of the scale of Titanic's engine. So as far as an advertising piece for Harland & Wolff and the White Star Line, 10 out of 10. Well, now we get to Titanic's actual launch. And so the day's arrived. And I mentioned that Arlanza was going to make a little cameo, and that's her over there on the left. You can see that she's quite small in comparison. There's a few things going on with Titanic. They've got the cranes raised up, presumably because it looks cool. I think it looks great, more as like a press move, having things kind of, when you've got nothing on the ship's upper works to convey size, if you have the anchor cranes and the cargo cranes erect like that, it looks big and imposing. You can see there are these lines, these heavy lines rigged along the ship's hull. They would be connected at one end to drag chains, which is essentially just hundreds of tons of chains connected to the ship's hull designed to stop it once it hits the water, because otherwise it'll just keep going down the river. So it does need to be arrested when it has been launched. And so that's the main method of stopping the ship from going, is drag chains. You can see there's people up here really enjoying the view. Best seat in the house. They've got a little flag there, which to the best of my kind of research, this is hilarious. It's a really tiny flag. It's bright red, and in white lettering it says, "Launch." As like a, hey, just so you know, we're about to launch this giant 20,000 ton hull, so steer clear. As if the tiny flag on top of the huge thing that's moving at you is what's going to do it. Welsh is obviously very impressed with this view because he takes a second angle of the ship entering the water. And what's really fun about this is you can see the thousands of people in the background watching. You don't really get a sense of how many people actually came out to see Titanic's launch until you kind of see this angle. What I really like about this picture is you can see people who have ascended like the rigging of ships nearby to go and watch. So they're like clinging on to the rat lines of the masts of these ships just to watch, just to peek over and see Titanic get launched. Here we get a much better view of the really heavy cables that were attached to Titanic's hull, attached to the fairleads, attached to the bollards and everything to stop it moving once it hit the river, which it did. This is one of the most photographed angles of Titanic. It turns out it wasn't just Welsh who took this picture. There were a few other photographers around him who took it. What's really interesting about this angle is you get to see all this smoke coming from somewhere, where you can just see the tip of where it might be coming from. This is a donkey boiler. It's essentially been put on the ship because the ship's main engines and boilers haven't been installed yet, but there is steam machinery on board that needs to work because the ship needs to be warped. That is, it needs to be moored. It needs to be taken to where it needs to go, to be built, to be finished. And so the ship has to be connected to the shore. And so they need to use the steam machinery, the big winches and the windlasses on board to maneuver it successfully and effectively. The problem is they need steam, but Titanic's boilers haven't been installed yet. When the ship is finished, they will be fed by the main steam lines, but there's no way to feed them yet. So Titanic and all ships like her were effectively fitted with things called donkey boilers, which were just small boilers purely existing to feed that machinery that is needed to warp and maneuver the ship safely into position. You can't really see them in any of Welsh's photos of Titanic, but you can see them in Welsh's photos of other Harland and Wolff ship launches, where you can see these chimneys and they're just pumping smoke. And in other photographs, you can even see steam being evacuated from the portholes of ships where the vents are located temporarily. You can see here a very clear view of the launch cradle that's come with the ship. So that's still riveted to Titanic's side, and it's going to stay there until she gets dry docked some months down the track. So obviously a point of extreme pride. What's really interesting is that months are skipped. So Titanic's launched in May 1911. What happens between May and about February the next year? Welsh doesn't photograph. There are a lot of pictures of Titanic sitting there without her funnels, without her machinery installed. The reason Welsh didn't photograph it was basically because he already did it with Olympic. And it's a really kind of inglorious kind of period while the ship's being built. You know, it's not like the fun time. The ship's really basic. It's really structurally quite, bereft of any of the really impressive things like funnels. So they'd already photographed Olympic. Welsh clearly just figured, we'll just photograph the ship as she comes together. At this stage, Titanic is a lot more complete. This is taken at around about the same time that famous bit of footage emerges in February 1912 of the ship being moved into dry dock. They have already begun work down here on B deck, installing the staterooms and the cabins that will mark Titanic out as different to her earlier sister Olympic. What they haven't done is installed the screens up on A deck that will externally differentiate Olympic and Titanic. So a lot of people mistake this as a photograph of Olympic. It's actually not. It is Titanic. They just haven't fitted these screens, these windows on the deck above on A deck that will clearly mark it out as Titanic. But you can see the name Titanic etched and painted into the side of the hull. We know it's not Olympic, and the name is very clearly there. They've installed the funnels, they've started to install some of the upper works and things. We can see fans and ventilators going in and things that will really be required to cool the ship, provide fresh air. This is early 1912, and Titanic's got to be ready for April. So clearly, there's a lot of work needs to be done. So this is like the busiest period of work aboard Titanic, where they're furiously painting and, you know, riveting and really cladding the inside of the ship with all the luxurious paneling that's going to be needed to hide the fact that it's actually a giant steel skeleton. This is a great picture of Titanic because it's a lot closer to completion. And we can see that the A-deck screens have still not yet been installed. The reason we know this is Titanic and not Olympic is because of the way that her B-deck windows are unevenly spaced. And this is something that Olympic didn't have. It's a really beautiful broadside view of Titanic and quite a unique stage in the ship's construction. This is a picture that Welsh has taken because he can use this to give to postcard companies and trade journals before the ship is actually completed so they can get a head start on publicizing the ship's launch, publicizing her impending introduction, and creating merch, essentially, ahead of time. But if you zoom in and have a closer look, you can see she's still really not finished. The hull hasn't been painted. There's a lot of work going on. There's a platform that's been erected around the funnel that they're actually using to paint the ship's funnels with. They've been painted, which is a good start, but the rest of the ship needs a lot of polishing before she's finished. At the last minute, they're going to fit those A-deck screens, which is what's going to protect people, give them a little more space that's covered when they promenade up on A-deck. Ultimately, that will be what, for most people, differentiates Olympic Titanic from the exterior. She's not yet flying the White Star Line house flag because she has to earn it. She has to go through her sea trials before she can do that. And in fact, the next few photographs of Titanic taken by Welsh are of this stage. So before Titanic takes her sea trials, or around about the time she does, Welsh goes down into some of the staterooms that are different to those aboard Olympic. And here's the big difference. Welsh doesn't photograph Titanic's grand staircase. He doesn't photograph the big, luxurious public rooms because they're almost identical to Olympic's. And he'd already photographed them. There are no photographs of Titanic's grand staircase. Every photograph you've ever seen of the grand staircase, including these really famous ones, these were taken by Welsh, but they're of Olympic. What he's doing is conserving money and taking pictures only of the rooms and the amenities that mark Titanic out as different to Olympic. And Titanic's got a lot of them. Titanic's B deck has been completely rearranged so that all of these staterooms and all these cabins and all this luxury is something Titanic has, Olympic doesn't. So Welsh goes crazy taking pictures of these rooms. What's funny though is if you zoom in, you can see some places where she's not quite finished yet. You can see carpets that are kind of, you know, a bit rough and haven't been finished at the edges. You can see lamps that have just been haphazardly plonked down on tables and things. Probably the most funny of all, you can see that this table in particular is covered in dust. It's not been polished up for the photograph. The lamp's just been plopped onto it. The cable's running all over the place. But these are to give agents, to give the public an idea of what Titanic's going to look like. In a trade journal, in a pamphlet, you're probably not going to be able to make out the fact that the carpet's not perfectly straight. But because we can see it in these, you know, big, you know, blown up negatives, we have more of an idea. This is a picture of Titanic's gym that Welsh took. Why he took a picture of Titanic's gym and didn't just use Olympics, I'm not entirely sure. But it's good because now we have a picture of a Titanic space that is cool and unique. This is a photograph of a room that is very unique to Titanic. Olympic wouldn't get one of these until a fair while later after Titanic's sinking. It's the Café Parisien. On Olympic, this is just a promenade. On Titanic, it's been repurposed very cleverly into a very light and airy space. What's interesting about this, though, we're all quite familiar with the Café Parisien. If you're a bit of a Titanic nerd, you'll recognize it. What's interesting here is that they haven't finished installing the decorations. The tables are empty, they're bare, there's nothing on them, the furniture's in place, but the plants, which I'm fairly certain were fake, the plants haven't been put in, the ivy on the trellises. So it looks kind of bare and a bit ugly in this photograph, which is funny, because again, this has been reproduced so many times. In real life, this would have been a very colourful room. It would have had very nice pastels, and it would have looked really nice. They don't show up in black and white photos, so this looks quite bland and boring, but as our friends from Titanic Honor and Glory show us, it was actually a very colourful, very nice room. They've just started putting some plants, some ivy around the trellis here. They haven't done the rest of the room. Probably should have before they took the picture. Now comes the day of Titanic's sea trials. So this is April 1912. This is just before the ship is going to go to Southampton. These pictures tell us probably the least about the way Titanic was built, but they do give us some insight into kind of the mindset of the builders and that before the sea trials, because as you will notice, Titanic's not wearing her owner's flag. She's not wearing the White Star Line burgee. The reason for that is she hasn't been handed over to her owners yet. She hasn't earned the privilege. The builders have to demonstrate that their ship can hit the speeds and maneuverability expected of the design before it is handed over to the owners, before the owners sign off on it. It hasn't happened yet. So Titanic's going out to her sea trials, not flying the White Star Line flag, but there will be a very ceremonial sort of moment where the ship will hoist the White Star Line flag for the first time, which of course she did. So these are, again, very famous photos of Titanic, very beautiful photos of Titanic. This is when she looks her best. Brand new, her owners still haven't signed off. And this is kind of the end of the line for Welsh's coverage of Titanic. And he takes his final picture of Titanic, which isn't this one. I always thought this was the final picture Welsh took of Titanic. It's a nice symbolic view. It shows Titanic setting off into the distance, and it would be really nice if this was his last picture. We can see the marker boys on the side, marking the channel. Titanic's about to let go of the tugs and go out and show what she can do. It's not the last picture of Titanic. The reason we know this is because of a little fact I just told you, which is that Titanic didn't wear the flag of her owners until she had done her sea trials. And actually, we have this really interesting side view of Titanic that is numbered differently from the others. It sits a little earlier in the catalogue, but it must be one of, if not the last pictures Welsh took of Titanic, because the ship is flying the owner's flag. So this has to have been after her sea trials. So this has got to be possibly even the last day that Titanic was in Southampton. You can see that all of her boilers are on. All three funnels are smoking away. Titanic looks about ready to go. It's unclear if this is when she just got back from her builder's trials, or when she was about to leave for Southampton for the first and final time. Suffice it to say, though, Titanic successfully passed her trials, construction was almost complete, and she has earned the right to fly the White Star Line flag. The reason I say construction is almost complete is because we know that people were down below decks kind of doing a few little things here and there, zhuzhing the ship where they could, you know, painting this and just that, you know, making a few little changes before the ship set off to take on her first passengers. Welsh gives a really nice condensed view of Titanic's construction, but he misses big chunks that he didn't bother with because there are those photographs of Olympic that kind of already did it. So unfortunately, as ever, Titanic is the neglected child until she sinks. And then, of course, the public interest explodes. There's not been enough footage of Titanic taken, so what do they do? Well, we've got all these great photos of Olympic sitting around. Why don't we just use those? Olympic's propellers. Titanic's propellers were never photographed because Welsh had already photographed Olympic's propellers, so why bother? How many times have you seen these pictures misidentified as Titanic? The grand staircase, the smoking room, the lounge, all these interior spaces, they're not Titanic's. He had already photographed Olympic, so why bother with the middle child? Even then, the installing of the engines and the machinery, Welsh catalogued for the Britannic. There are these great photos of the giant German floating crane that was used to install all that machinery into the Britannic. He didn't bother with the Titanic. And it's a little bit sad, but it means that the photographs that we do have, they're precious, they're few, but I think they're really cool. They're really interesting, and I would love to have all of them hanging up in my house. I hope you have found this a little bit interesting. It's always fun to go over these pictures that we've seen a million times, but then to pick apart maybe a few details that we didn't notice. If you enjoyed this, if you learned anything, let me know in the comments. If you think I missed anything, or if you think I got something wrong, also let me know in the comments. As always, it has been very nice to sit down and chat with you. Until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and I'll see you again.